So our first speaker is Elsie Marie Orr, and her title is up there, so I give you Elsie.
Hi, good morning. So today I'll be talking about the Indigenous Peoples Education Program being implemented by the Philippines Department of Education to see whether it succeeds in its aim in promoting Indigenous knowledge systems and the and language maintenance of Indigenous languages, particularly in Mindoro and in Mangyad communities in that island. So a brief background on this frame, on this policy. So the Indigenous Peoples Education Framework was actually implemented in as part of the Basic Education Sector Reform Agenda of the Department of Education in our country. It aims to provide education which is both culturally responsive, and it was also implemented as a response to the Education for All movement, which started in the 90s as an initiative of the UNESCO. Which aims to provide inclusive education and try to provide education for all children. Of course, this is all part of fulfilling the aims of the Indigenous Peoples' Rights Act, which seeks to provide the right to education of all Indigenous people. The framework, the IPED framework, was actually implemented in 2011. So the DepEd, Department of Education, released the policy framework in 2011. But that framework only included the statement, some objectives of the policy itself. So it included these seven objectives, which is one, to provide universal and equitable access to quality and relevant basic education for all Indigenous children. Two, the integration of Indigenous knowledge systems and practices in all areas and processes of learning. Three, to provide adequate and culturally appropriate learning resources and environment to IP learners. Train more teachers and learning facilitators in the implementation of IP education. And the creation of units within the department which will be responsible in developing and monitoring the use of IP education in basic education, the expansion and strengthening of linkages with other organizations which are involved also in providing education and opportunities for IP children, and providing affirmative action to eradicate all forms of discrimination against IP youth. It was only in 2015 when the Department of Education released a more expanded and more detailed framework about the program. So it covers all of these areas wherein they talk about the philosophies of education which they follow, and they emphasize on the importance of empowering the students and allowing them to strengthen their links to their community, which would enable them to engage more meaningfully in the wider society if they are more empowered in their own identity as well. Curriculum design was also described in this framework, wherein it was especially emphasized that the curriculum that they will be making will be created in consultation with community leaders, elders, and holders of Indigenous knowledge, systems, and practices, so that the culture and practices and traditions and histories of the community that would be taught in schools would be accurately presented, and so as to help the teachers localize and contextualize the materials that they will be using in school. So for example, they will be looking into the regular life cycle of the community and how they would insert that in the curriculum and see how that will match with the learning competencies that they will target for each level. Or for example, they will include the Indigenous worldviews and beliefs in the curriculum as well, and how will they disseminate these to the children and what manner. So one of the key things that caught my attention is that it's also included here in their statement is that one of the requirements of their curriculum is that it must strengthen or It must revitalize and regenerate the culture, but also the indigenous languages of the children and the community that speaks it. The framework also covers the teaching methodologies and strategies that will be used under the IPED framework. So they emphasize that the teaching methodologies must address the needs of the students. So all of the teachers that I talked to would say that they need a special teaching methodology or a different methodology in teaching the IP youths, different from the non-Mangyan students, for example, because they learn more from experiential and tactile learning methods. So that has to be something that they develop in the teaching methodologies and strategies that they use. The learning resources that they make will also be done in consultation with elders, and learning and must be written in the local language or the mother tongue of the children as well. The learning assessment that will be used must also be must also match not only with the national competencies or the standards that are set by the Department of Education, but it must also see or assess the capabilities of the children in becoming responsible members of the community that they belong to. And then finally, the framework also provides some also describes how they would be able to provide or to train more teachers who will be providing IP education. So it includes, for example, statements on how they will train the teachers. Like, for example, it says there that the teachers, and not only the teachers, but also the school heads will be undergoing immersion, for example, in the communities that they will be taught, they will be teaching in, so that they will have a clear understanding and also appreciation of the culture of the children that they will be teaching. Now, a short background on the focus of my research. So I got into this IPED research because I was actually talking to some Mansaka Datus in Mindanao, and they talked to me about the IP or the culture classes that they conduct in Mindanao, in Davao del Norte, among their children. So they had special culture classes for their students, teaching the students how to sing and dance. And they told me that this was all part of the IP education framework of the Department of Education. And it made me wonder, because at that time I was also doing research around Mindoro, and I didn't hear about this IP education. So it made me wonder whether it was also being conducted in Oriental Mindoro, where I was doing research. So it made me wonder whether it was being implemented there. What are the contents of the IPED curriculum for Mangyan groups in Mindoro, and whether they are differentiated among the different, because there are different groups in the island, and what materials they were developing, and whether it does promote the language, and also what the perceptions of the people are about this IPED framework, and whether they think it successfully promotes their culture and their language. So the focus of my study is actually there in Mindoro, in the island of Mindoro, which is just south of Manila. So the island is actually made up of, there are 8 indigenous groups in this island, which are very closely related to each other. The Iraya, Alangan, Tajawan, Taubuhid, Bangon, Buhid, Hanunoo and Gratagnon groups. So my focus though was among the Iraya group, the Bangon, Buhid, and Hanunoo. So just a brief background on each group. So first is the Hanunoo Mangyan. There's really no reliable data on how many speakers speak the Hanunoo language, but in Ethnologue, they state that the population is made up of 18,800. And the latest census states that the latest census of the National Statistics Office also includes data of people who reported that they use the language in their household. So they say that in Oriental Mindoro, because the country is divided into half, the Oriental Mindoro side and the Occidental Mindoro side, so east and west side of the island. So in Oriental Mindoro, there are about 4,000 plus households who claim that they speak the language. And in Occidental Mindoro, there are about 400 plus households who speak the language. But Hanunoong Mangyan is probably the most popular group in this among the Mangyan groups, because they are the most studied Mangyan group as well. Mostly because of the efforts of Anton Posma, an anthropologist who did a lot of work with them and also helped promote their culture. So if you go to the Mangyan Heritage Center, for example, in Mindoro, most of the materials that they have there shows the culture from Hanunoong Mangyan. Usually if you say Mangyan, the first thing that comes into your mind is the Hanunoong. But there are other Mangyan groups as well on the island, and their language is it's very different from each other, but still related. And the next group that I visited was the Buhid Mangyan group. So according to Ethnologue, there are about 9,370, and the speakers are a little bit less than Hanunoong, but they're also a big group in Mindoro. So the Buhid Mangyan, just like the Hanunoong, their culture is still very much intact. A lot of children still speak the language. And they're also a very strong group as well. The third Mangyan group that I visited was the Bangon Mangyan. This group is a little bit more isolated, and actually they were only recently recognized, or relatively recently recognized, as a separate Mangyan group. Even among the Mangyan groups, there seems to be a hierarchy, or there does seem to be a hierarchy wherein the Hanunoong Mangyan are considered of higher status, because most of them are more educated and more empowered, whereas the Bangon Mangyan are considered the lowest Mangyan group. So even if you talk to other Mangyan groups, they would say that the Bangon Mangyans were the dirtiest group and the most uneducated group. And there are also some myths that they had tails, and that they had tails on there. And then, but because of their isolation, the language is still very much intact. So all the children speak Bangon, and they also speak Bangon in school as well. And then finally, the fourth group is the Iraya Mangyan group, which is located in the northern part of the Mindoro Island. And then according to Ethnologue, there are about 10,000. The population is made up of 10,000, but that's actually a very big group. It's just that there are very few speakers. And so the communities I visited, there are very few people who still speak the language. So a lot of them has already shifted to Tagalog. And so children also speak Tagalog, and they use Tagalog in schools. The question is, what is the status of IP Ed in Oriental Mindoro? So how are they implementing IP education in Oriental Mindoro? So when I looked into it, apparently it's still under development. Because even though the policy was released in 2011, the framework which describes how you're going to implement the framework was only released in 2015. And the teachers and school heads and administrators in Mindoro specifically really only started training and disseminating information about this framework fairly recently, more actively last year. So for example, in October 2016, there was a workshop wherein the teachers were invited for a workshop on materials development. So teachers were asked to create big books, stories, which they can use in classrooms, write curriculums for the levels that they were teaching. Although when I asked the teacher, so were you able to finish anything in that workshop, and they were saying that no, because we really can't, because it was only a week long. And so they really didn't finish much at all. Currently, actually this week, the DepEd, the regional district of the Department of Education, in, under which Mindoro is, belongs to, is currently holding a workshop in which focuses on standardizing the orthography of different indigenous languages in the region, including the Mangyan languages. So they're trying to standardize the orthography, and part of the and among the participants in the group are not only the teachers, the administrators, but they also included or invited elders to go with them, so that they elicited data on the language right on the spot, and from there they will be doing the orthography of the language so that they can standardize the spelling, so that they can already start making the learning resources that they will be using in school. So it's still very much in its early stages. Although IP education, though, if you ask them around, is really not new. So if you ask one of the institutions in Mindoro, the Mangyan Mission, which is a Catholic missionary organization, this group, this institution also has administrates Mangyan schools in the island. So currently they have 8 Mangyan IP elementary schools among 5 Mangyan groups. And they also help in deploying teachers in 4 other Mangyan schools. Because in Mindoro they have separate schools for Mangyan groups or the indigenous groups, separate from the non-Mangyan or the Tagalog speaking children. They're also building the first Mangyan high school, and they tell me that they've been implementing IP education since 2002. They've been implementing the practices stated. They've been practicing all of the things that are included in the framework that was released in 2015. And they were also included in the talks with the Department of Education, but at the national level, in how to create that framework in 2011. The problem is, though, even though Mangyan Mission is talking with the Department of Education branch at the national level, they aren't really talking with the regional level. So there's some miscommunication between them. So there's lack of communication. So, for example, they weren't invited for the current orthography workshop that's being held in Manila right now. But they were saying that, oh, but we already did that with the groups that they were working with. And they already did some, or they've already made some learning resources, which the Department of Education is trying to do now. So there are some redundancies in what you're trying to do. Although some teachers were saying that these materials that the Mangyan Mission created, some of them have some mistakes. So like some materials that were meant for Iraya learners, they would say, "Now, oh, that's not Iraya language at all, that's Alangan," which is a bit tricky because the two languages are very closely related to one another. So they're very much alike. So what are the challenges ahead for the IP education? The biggest challenge, I think, while going around interviewing people, is that there's really a lack of teachers. Some Mangyan groups, they're a bit luckier, like for example the Hanunoo group, because they have a lot of teachers that are already graduated. So these are 2 of my consultants. They're both Hanunoo and they teach in a Hanunoo IT school. So that's fine. So they are very much immersed in their culture. But then there are some groups wherein the education is very low. So educational attainment is very low, so they lack IP teachers who can teach the culture or teach in the language of the children. So actually, even in their school, the teacher assigned in the kindergarten level was not Hanunoo. So she was actually Tagalog and also very proficient in Bisaya, so they're different languages. And so she was assigned in kindergarten, wherein he was really having a hard time with the children because they can't communicate. So sometimes she would be talking to them in Bisaya. So even though she's been there for 2 years, she's still having a lot of problems. So I asked the people, so the Department of Education, oh, what are you going to do about this? So they just told me that, oh, it will be the responsibility of the teachers, because once they're there, they have to learn the language. And so I asked them, on your own, how are you going to do that? They have to do it, it's their responsibility, it's part of their work. So the head of the education branch of Mangyan Mission also said that, oh, they have to do it because it's part of their work. So the Mangyan Mission head said that, oh, they not only have to be teachers, but they also have to be anthropologists and linguists, which I thought was, wow, that's a very big responsibility for the teachers. Because not only were they handling different problems of the students, teaching everyday lessons, and all at a very small salary, they also have to become linguists and anthropologists as well. And then another big challenge is that the language shift that's happening in Mindoro, so the children, especially the Iraya children, are already shifting to Tagalog. The other groups are less so, but then you can also see changes happening. So one Buhid teacher who also did some work on the language itself said that in the span of 10 years, she could also already see a lot of changes in the language. Like for example, 10 years ago, if she asked the children, oh, what's umbrella in Buhid? They would say, oh, it's fandong. But now she asked the teachers, oh, umbrella is payo, which is Tagalog word. So changes is already happening at a very fast rate. So if they're going to implement IP education, they also have to ask what is the language that the children are speaking at the moment. And then there's also a problem with the language attitudes. So for example, there are reports of some groups who are saying, oh no, we don't want the children to learn in the indigenous language, in our native language. So for example, Hanano'o, they were saying they want the students to focus on Filipino or Tagalog and English, because that's what will make them integrate when they go to college, for example. And then finally, they also have to address other issues. First, because there's a very high dropout rate in schools and absenteeism. So a lot of the teachers were saying that after first year of high school, the classroom is halved because a lot of the girls get pregnant and cannot continue school anymore. There's also lack of family support. And there's also this discrimination is still being felt. So if you look at whether or not the IP ed objectives are being achieved, so far, very few of them are being achieved. So there's still a lot of work to be done. Whether or not the IP ed is achieving its aim to in revitalizing and regenerating and strengthening and enriches the indigenous knowledge systems of the groups and the indigenous learning systems and the indigenous languages or not, it's still under debate because, again, it's still at a very young stage, especially in Oriental Mindoro. So there's still a lot of work to be done, and still a lot of people to talk to as well. So, because I'm out of time, thank you very much.
We have about 6 minutes for questions, so.
For the current workshop on the standardization of orthography, two of our colleagues were actually asked to work with the teachers. So for at least for that part, we have some linguists involved.
I don't know that Corey has been working on this language for a number of years.
Yeah.
He will have a paper out sometime this year.
Yes, he was telling me that he was also working on Iraya language.
Is there an attempt to coordinate the orthographies of the eight languages?
No, because each group are being left to decide on their own.
Yeah.
of what the orthography, what it will, how, what shape it will take in.
But to what extent are the phonologies of the languages similar?
They're very similar to each other. It's just that there are some sounds that are present in some language, like the T and the F and the H.
Well, you can sort of see why it might have made, it might make sense to coordinate.
You're right. You're right. The northern group and the southern group are placed in different subgroups, but sound-wise, they're very similar to each other. It's the lexical and the grammatical part that's very different.
Is there a difference between the languages in the Philippines that are large, like Cebuano versus Tagalog, and indigenous languages, and how are how does the Ministry of Education define differences among these groups, and how does it launch out in the classroom?
These languages are very different from each other, so they belong to, because the Philippines has over 100 different languages. The linguists identify subgroups, but the government, in their part, they work on common knowledge, like, oh, there's Cebuano, there's Kapampangan, but beyond that, they don't really go into much detail. So, like, for example, one of the problems that they have, especially in Bicol, where they know that there's a Bicolano language, but then if you go in deeper, Bicolano, there are a lot of different varieties, and some of which are not mutually intelligible. And so that's where the problem goes in. Because if you assign Bicolano language as the language of instruction in this region, you'll have to be faced with the problem of which variety you're going to choose. So they chose one, but then, and they use that for the learning materials, and they disseminated the materials, but then when you go to the schools, the children can't understand what's written because the variety is very different from what they were using at home. IPED has a wider scope because it works with MPB-MLE in such that it also promotes the use of mother tongue of the children, but they also aim to include the cultural practices in the curriculum being taught in schools. So, for example, if you're going to teach about the earth. In the science, sub-science, they will also talk about what's the worldview of our people, about how the world was created, for example. So they will also include that into the curriculum.
So you mentioned there's a lot of miscommunication between different groups, some who have worked on this and finished some part and some who haven't. Is there any effort to kind of coordinate communication between those groups?
Well, there is. So, for example, the Mangyan Mission people say that they keep badgering DepEd to include them in the talks. So, especially the regional level, because at the national level, they're being invited to all of the consultations, but then it's at the regional level where they aren't really doing much communication at all. But yeah.
Is there any reason why they're not invited at the regional level?
At the moment, it's not really clear to me, but at the moment, it's not clear to me why there is a lack of communication between the different groups.
Do you think there's some kind of psychological or cultural resistance on the part of outsider teachers to learn local languages? So you said like, the Tagalog speaking teacher was there for 2 years but didn't learn, I don't know, if they tried, they would probably have.
I'm not sure if it's like a psychological resistance to learning the language. I think it's more of the lack of time, because they're handling so many children in one classroom. They're handling, so they have to deal with different problems. Like they have to do feeding program for the children because the children go to school without having eaten breakfast. Or they have to visit the families to see, oh, why was your child absent for a long time? So because they have so many duties that they don't really have time to really focus and learn the language, but they do absorb some of the language from the children. It's just that they can't really be fluent within a short span of time. And while they're doing that, they're also still teaching the children, so it's a bit difficult for them.
Okay, I think we're about out of time. Do you have one quick question? Go ahead.
I can ask after.
You sure?
Oh, well, okay. Yeah. So are there any efforts in the at the regional level to train, say, linguistic anthropologists in the communities to help with the coordination of this?
Well, for the Department of Education, that's, they really don't have plans yet for that. But our department is trying to reach out to these groups, and hopefully we'll create a program wherein we can train members from the local community to do work on this.
Okay, thank you very much.